welcome to this week's episode of The Homeschool How-To. I'm Cheryl, and I invite you to join me on my quest to find out, why are people homeschooling? How do you do it? How does it differ from region to region? And should I homeschool my kids? Stick with me as I unfold the answers to each of these questions week by week. Welcome. With us today, we have Brooke from Arizona. Brooke, thank you for being on the show. Welcome. How are you?
Thank you for having me. Happy to be here.
Now, why don't we start out by you letting me know how many kids you have and just kind of what got you into homeschooling?
Okay. I have three boys. My oldest is about to turn six, just next week or the week after. And then I have a 2.5-year-old and a 7-month baby. So we're just kind of at the beginning of our homeschool journey. Before, I worked all the way through until I had my second son, and I was a teacher. So I taught 3 years in a district public school and then 3 years at a classical charter school here in Arizona. And we had always talked about homeschooling. I'm the only one of my siblings that was not homeschooled at one time. So I have background in that. My mother-in-law is actually, she just retired from being a charter. In California, where we grew up, they have charter schools that are homeschooled. So they have a charter school teacher who kind of oversees the curriculum. And she did that for much of her career. So we both had a lot of exposure to homeschool, even though neither of us, my husband or I, were homeschooled ourselves. So it was always something that we wanted to do for our kids. And so we've done that pretty much. I mean, that's what we did with my son when he started kindergarten. He did go to a 2-day week preschool for 3 hours, you know, Tuesdays and Thursdays. But other than that, we've been doing homeschool and we love it.
Yeah. So I have kids just about the same age, minus the middle one, at the 7-month-old. And then my son is 4.5. So we're in that preschool phase right now where it's like 3 days a week for 2.5 hours. And even just that little bit, I've talked about before how it's like there are things that I don't even agree with in just that short amount of time, like the hand sanitizer on their hands as soon as, you know, I feel like every 30 minutes they're throwing it on them. So it's interesting that you went to school to become a teacher, but kind of knowing that you wanted to homeschool. I mean, are you going to do both or will you have to leave your profession?
So when we had my second son, I came home. I always wanted to be a stay-at-home mom. My husband and I started dating the end of my college experience. So teaching was kind of a job that I could do until I got married and something that I knew, you know, if I needed to go, for some reason needed to go to work with kids, it fit in really well with that goal. And then my husband, actually, he was going to be a firefighter and he hurt his back. And so he had to go back to school for kind of a second career change path there. So I worked to put him through nursing school. And we had our oldest during that time. So he stayed home with our son and went to school. And I taught and, you know, was the breadwinner on a teacher salary for several years. So when we had our second son, he graduated from nursing school right at the height of the pandemic and started his nursing career then. And so then I was able to come home. But our oldest was diagnosed with autism when he was just before his 4th birthday. And so that was a big part of why we put him into preschool, because it was like a momentary freak out of, oh no, he really needs socialization now. And so we saw his preschool as kind of more a piece of his therapy than his primary education. He's very bright. When he was first diagnosed, he wasn't super verbal, but that came on really quickly. And he loves to learn. So even when he was homeschool or when he was going to that preschool, I was doing homeschool with him the other days just because he wanted to learn more. So my teaching career was kind of like a backup. But I'm so thankful for it because it's informed me so much just in the education of my own kids and to help other homeschool families in different ways as well.
Yeah. So what are the kind of reporting requirements or different laws that you guys have in Arizona about homeschooling?
Yeah, so Arizona is kind of unique. There's more of these programs coming out throughout the country, but we, if I'm not mistaken, had the first ESA program. So it's an empowerment scholarship account. So there's kind of a lot of controversy around these. It's not a voucher program, but other states call it voucher program. Because there is an option for taking some government funds to help home educate. In Arizona, those are two really unique distinctions, though. So you can be a homeschool family and you file an affidavit and basically you're just signing a paper saying, I promise I will teach my child reading, grammar, science, history, and math. And you sign that piece of paper one time when you pull them out of school or when they would be going into kindergarten, and that's it. And there's no reporting requirements or anything. Parents are able to make their own high school transcripts and diploma when the time comes, and that's it. So there's a lot of freedom available for homeschool families, which is amazing. If you want to utilize the ESA program, which just went universal this last October, before that, it was available only for students with disabilities and some other categories like military service. Your parents are in the military. If you are zoned to attend a failing school and a couple other different things like that. So we actually are part of the ESA program, and we became an ESA family. My son's an ESA student after he got diagnosed with autism. And so what you're able to do with those funds is it gives you 90% of what the state would give to you, the school that you're enrolled in, into an account that you're able to use for educational expenses. It can be used for private school tuition, or it can be used to home educate. When you use it for home education, in our case, because our son is a special ed student, we're able to use that to cover therapies. So we pay for his speech therapy, a social skills class that he attends, swim lessons, a PE class that he goes to once a week, and then curriculum out of that account. So there's two ways to homeschool. With the government funds, there isn't any extra testing requirements. You just have to spend some of the funds on those subject areas that the state requires. So reading, grammar, math, science, and history each year, so that it shows that you're, teaching the subjects that they want you to be teaching. But they allow you to use whatever curriculums you want. Faith-based things are covered as well. So there's still a lot of freedom in that. I know a lot of people have concerns about, is that going to maybe bleed into taking away some freedoms for homeschool families? At this point, our legislator has been really good about making sure that the laws are written in full protection of families for that. If that ever changed or was threatening to change, we would pull out of the program. But for now, it's serving us well.
That's good. And I was going to ask you that, because when you see scroll through Instagram and whatnot, you'll see parents like, don't take the money. It's, just like a lot of other things. It looks good up front. What are they going to demand from us later on? So that's as long as you can pull out, if there were requirements that you didn't feel suited you guys anymore.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. And I definitely understand those concerns. Arizona is a really unique place, kind of politically too. Our superintendent of the state superintendent is conservative. The governor is very progressive. And so we're definitely a purple state through and through. And so some of that infighting on some of these things is kind of interesting. But we have a conservative legislator right now. And so they've put some really good protections in place for that program. there's some parents think that there's too much regulation within the ESA program as it is. I personally feel like if I'm accepting their financial help, then I will submit to, you know, the requirements that they have. And if they become too, you know, cumbersome, then we just won't take it anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, I think people, I guess, are just have learned what our government's capable of.
So yeah.
Like, we're going to tread lightly on this one. So, but yes, it's nice definitely. To know that it's there in some states because,
yeah,
I know we pay a lot in school taxes where I am in upstate New York. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it would be nice to have a little bereavement if you choose to not send your kids there. But
yeah,
I don't see
and it. I think it's. Go ahead. I
don't see them giving us anything unless it had strings attached, real heavy strings. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And the original intent of the program was to primarily help families with special students with special needs. Mm-hmm. And so the universal expansion is a new thing. And so I think that's probably where if strings are coming, it's going to come through that expansion, although you know, I do think that the dollar falling in the backpack is a good idea. It'll just be interesting to see if we're able to keep those safeguards in place.
Right. So. And that takes looking at what is actually on the bills that are getting passed mm-hmm. through the legislature. And, you know, I talk about this all the time. I don't even know where to begin with that. We didn't learn about that in school, about what, you know, how mm-hmm. to get notified of what's on the table and like, why isn't that in the news? That's actual news. Hey,
yeah,
let's talk about what's on this before it gets passed so that if you want to do something about it, you can. But, you know, I guess so to me, if I homeschool, that will be a big, even if I don't, that'll be a big part of what I talk to my son about, like, make you mm-hmm. figuring out how, you know, maybe doing a whole year on, okay, let's see what's getting put into law or, you know, attempting to, and the whole process. We never did that. So do you see a difference in your son from when he was in preschool to strictly homeschooled right now? Do you think he enjoys one over the other?
Yeah, so of course, when he graduated from his little preschool, and all his friends were talking about going to kindergarten, he said he still wanted to go to school because he did really love being with his friends. But the biggest thing for me was I'm really glad I did that preschool so I could see what it would be like for him to go to school for a little bit. And I think this is true with all kids, but particularly because he has autism. He would go and he'd be so good at preschool and he wouldn't have any outbursts or, you know, he's very social with the other students. His teacher always had great things to say. And then he would come home from school that day and it just sucked everything out of him. And so by the time he got home at just in the middle of the day, he was just exhausted. A lot of times he would fall asleep on the way home and just sleep until, you know, 4 p.m. possibly, or he would just be extra emotional. And I know it's because it just took so much out of him. So I just thought, I told my husband, I don't want someone else to get the best of him every day when we're looking towards kindergarten. You know, I want us to have that. I want to be with him during the best part of his day. And so that was another reason that I love homeschool, because you're able to separate those two things as well. I think he learns better and does the academics better when they're separate from the social, so that when we're working on his social skills and he's socializing, he can just focus on that. And when he's learning and doing academics, he can just focus on that. And I think that takes some of that heavy load off of him as well, because he's working so hard to get the social piece right that nothing else is really able to sink in.
Yeah, that's really sweet. I'm like, feel like such a jerk now because I say to myself all the time, oh my gosh, when he acts up in class, do you want someone that doesn't love him screaming at him all day? I scream at you and I love you. Can you imagine these people that have no attachment to you whatsoever? Just what are they like? I can't, but He's not that bad of a kid. Like, he's not really that bad. He's so high energy. I was thinking today, I was like, I just can't imagine him sitting for 6 hours or even, the little bit that they get outside. I feel like it's all the energy just let go that he's going to hurt somebody or, they're going to be annoyed with him and hurt him. And, oh no, he's also just really clumsy. And so, yeah, I'm like, that little protection part of me is there too. Like, you're cooping him up all day, and then once you finally let him out, like, are you guys really keeping an eye on him? Because even at swim class, we were just there, they've got six kids. The swim coach is like a 17-year-old that they picked off the street. I mean, he's very nice, but so I'm there trying to make sure that I'm just counting heads. That's all I'm doing. Cause they have them in the middle of the deep end with a little platform that moves, and the kids are just jumping all over. And the whole half an hour, I'm just sitting there going, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 heads. Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Oh my God, there's a head missing. There's But meanwhile, I mean, I've never heard of anyone drowning at the YMCA, so knock on wood, that will not happen, but it is hard to let go of control, I guess.
Yes, it is. Well, I taught first grade and I taught swim lessons before I was a teacher. So it is a lot of just herding cats, but good things happen, and there are wonderful teachers who treat every single child that comes into their classroom as if they were their own. There's wonderful schools that are full of those teachers, but it's not the case all the time. So I'm definitely an advocate for if you're not going to homeschool your child, you need to be very, very selective of where you do choose to send them.
So, what curriculum, if any, have you started with for kindergarten?
Yeah, so I do a lot of more of an eclectic homeschooler, I guess, if you wanted to put a label on me. I do a little bit of everything, and part of that is just from knowing what I liked when I taught. My son is very mathematically minded. He loves math and science, and so we do Singapore math for his mathematics, which is what I taught at my previous school, and I love it. It is a lot for parents, so I often recommend a math or a curriculum called Math with Confidence by Kate Snow. She is a, I think she went to Harvard or MIT. I'm probably getting that wrong, but she went to a very prestigious college, got her degree in mathematics, and then homeschooled her kids. And so she has a very, very parent-friendly curriculum that is in the same vein as Singapore math. And it goes from concrete, so using manipulatives, to pictorial, looking at pictures on the page and using picture representations, to then the algorithm or the equation after. So those are really great math curriculums that I recommend. And then the school that I taught at before I came home to be with my kiddos was a core knowledge school. Have you heard of the Core Knowledge Foundation?
No.
Okay, so the Core Knowledge Foundation was founded by Edie Hirsch. He is a, I don't even know what to call him, an educational philosopher. He is a prolific writer who he wrote a book called The Knowledge Deficit. He also wrote Cultural Literacy. Those are his most known works. But he did a lot of research and work looking into what's wrong with the school systems as early as the late 80s and early 90s. And his focus is on the lack of a content curriculum. So he his argument of what the why kids can't read and what's wrong with our schools is that they don't have enough background knowledge, particularly in inner city schools and schools with low income families. And I think people thought that this would maybe be rectified by the Common Core. But the difference with the Common Core and this idea of core knowledge is the Common Core standards are a list of skills. They're things that you do. They're not content to learn. And so a teacher, for example, in second grade, I'm kind of making this up, but in second grade, if the standard says something like study life cycles in, you know, in a science standard, a teacher could choose to do, if they want to do the butterfly, the life cycle of a butterfly, life cycle of a plant, of a toad, whatever they want to do there to fulfill that requirement. Sometimes the standards are listed so generally that it could just be cycles in nature, and maybe they do the weather cycle for that. And then you move on to third grade, and there's a similar standard. And so the teacher decides that they want to teach on the life cycle of a frog again. And so you could go through second, third, fourth, fifth grade, and all you've learned in biology is the life cycle of a frog. Yeah, Edie Hirsch's right. idea is to have a sequence of actual content. So he has core knowledge sequence that kind of goes through each grade level, what he believes every kid should know. So it's in literature, science, history, and it lays out a really nice foundation for kindergarten through eighth grade of how, you know, all the different topics. So studying Rome in third grade is what he recommends, as specific as the different events in each time period. So I use a lot of the core knowledge stuff because it's free online too. It's all written in story form. So there's little read alouds. My son and I just finished a unit study on ancient civilizations. So we studied Mesopotamia, Egypt, and then the Maya, Inca, and Aztec civilizations in South America. And it's all through story and free online. So we use for science and history. Yeah.
And I'll put links to that too in the show notes. It's so funny that you mentioned that, because in like a couple of episodes I've said, I know I learned about the Incas and the Mayans. Like, I remember the names. No idea what I learned about it or why. And that is the thing, the content behind it, even as I'm trying to teach him reading. Well, did anyone explain to them why we're trying to teach a letter, an L, and a sound it makes? You know, there's a bigger picture going on. And I think that makes all the difference when we're trying to learn. Kids are trying to learn. Adults, too. So I was recently in Barnes & Noble, and this is a true story. And in the children's section, there were a few books that caught me off guard. Woke Baby, Pink is for Boys, Baby Feminists 2, meaning there's a baby feminist one out there somewhere, and The Gay BCs. I had heard about these books, but I didn't actually think that they were out there on shelves. So when I came across the Tuttle Twins book series, I really wanted to show support for books that discussed matters that actually affect us, like the law, inflation, and government involvement in things like small business. Not only do I want to support a company like that, but those are the subjects I want to expose my children to, not sexuality and gender identity. I purchased the Tuttle Twins combo pack for ages 5 to 11 and also the Tuttle Twins toddler book series, where instead of learning that D is for drag, we learn that D is for the Declaration of Independence. Even though my son is only 4, I've been able to read the combo pack books with him. We do a little bit each night, and I am so impressed with the real life lessons that they teach. And also with the illustrations that make the point that they're trying to get across so much clearer. It makes it entertaining for him as well. And I'm learning right along with him. These books go over real life scenarios like owning a food truck and how hard having a small business is, and how it can be even harder when the government involvement starts to take over. They talk about inflation and all different aspects of economic principles, political principles, things that are really important and are just lacking in our schools these days. The Tuttle Twins have a book on America's history from 1215 to 1776, and then a volume 2 from 1776 to 1791. They also have audiobooks and books for teenagers. The author is a homeschooling father himself. And if you want to check out more of their products, please use my link, which will show them that I sent you there. TuttleTwins.com/ref/Cheryl. That's TuttleTwins.com/REF/CHERYL. You can grab the link in my show's description.
Yeah, and I think that the idea of having a real knowledge-heavy education kind of gets a bad rap in the homeschool community, because we want to be like, no, we want our kids to learn, study what they want and learn life skills, and all of those things are so important. But at the end of the day, if you don't have this common knowledge, things that you're expected to know, you know, as an adult, you're expected to kind of know at least something about the Romans, right? Mm-hmm. You're expected to know that our government system comes from the Greeks and the Romans. But if kids are never explicitly taught that, we can't just expect that they're gonna get that by osmosis. So there does tend to be kind of a shying away from just facts and figures. But I think when we can do it in story form, it's a really great way to make sure that our kids have that background knowledge, because it actually impacts reading. If you're reading a passage about or a news story, and you don't have any background knowledge on that topic, even if you can decode the words on the page, you're not going to comprehend it. And so that's what Edie Hirsch and the Core Knowledge Foundation really emphasizes, is we need to have, kids need a rich background knowledge, rich vocabulary in order to have greater reading comprehension. And so that's kind of what I base my homeschool on.
And even, I know I've talked about how, you know, I still wouldn't even know all the jobs that exist, right? So when they're, when you're 17, 18 looking for colleges, what do you want your degree to be in? What do you want to be? I don't know. What are all mm-hmm. the options? And I would imagine it's the same way for a child with the like unschooling approach. I think it's beautiful and wonderful, but they don't know what to explore if you're not laying out for them all the options, right? So mm-hmm. how would they know there is something on, you know, the Romans or solar system or, you know, things like that? Like it would have to happen to come up in conversation for them to say, I want to learn more about it. And like, you know, for instance, today we were listening to Granger Smith and, you know, my son's singing the words and he's like, Mom, why would a star be falling? And I'm like, well, let's YouTube that. And I found like this really cool YouTube channel called Free School. So F-R-E-E, school, free school. And they had really cool videos on the solar system and that were like awesome. Easy for kids to understand. Yeah. And then I'm like learning I'm like learning for the first time ever. I don't know what I did for the 16 years of my life that I was in school. I mean, I don't know. But I'm like, whoa, the sun could fit a million Earths in it? I'm like, pause. Yeah. Did you hear that? And he's like, I don't care, Mom.
Well, that's another beautiful thing about homeschool, because when you learn something together, it's culture building. So when you're learning with your child, when your kids are learning together with their siblings, that is building your family culture and building those relationships. I am not a mom who plays. I don't get down on the ground and play superheroes with my son. My husband does like crazy. That's just not my cup of tea. But we bond so deeply over reading books together and learning together. And hey, Mom, remember when you told me about, you know, the ziggurats in the ancient Aztec empire? Look, I built one with my Legos, things like that. And so the culture building in this idea of having a shared knowledge together is huge. If your kids grew up reading the same books, that's an experience that they had together.
Yeah, I think you just allowed so many moms to like breathe a sigh of relief, because to think of homeschooling is to think of like the mom that does it all, right? The cooking, the cleaning and all that stuff. But also the creative one, and you're doing all these, and we're going out in nature and we're doing field trips and we're doing co-ops and playgroups and, you know, there it's so much, and it's hard for people to kind of admit, like, I don't like getting on the ground and playing with my kids. Yeah. Perfectly fine. It is so wonderful. Like, you don't have to be. You can build the connection in other ways. And you know, I'm the same with you. You know, my husband would be the one to rough house and play on the floor. And, you know, where I tried to do like a little beaded project with him today. And I'm I'm like, no, honey, you're going to have to learn to read if you, because this is why I have to read the directions. Yeah. I'm reading the directions. I'm not even understanding. I'm like, I'm trying to put the thread where it's telling me to go, but it's not coming out right. And so it, like, the project pretty much was just like, oh, mom can't read. So
yeah. So I don't have to either.
But it was the cutest thing. We got it from Hobby Lobby and I loved it. Yeah. It's a keychain, but I have to probably see if my husband can figure it out because it's supposed to make a flower and it's not ending up that way. But it was cute that it was something we could do together and you know, him pretty much just make fun of me at the end.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's
some drop a bunch of beads and like
yeah. I think that's something for homeschool parents to definitely consider is just as much as you hear a lot about, you know, finding your kids' learning styles and things like that, you also need to understand your teaching style. And so if your teaching style is that you want to use worksheets sometimes and your child's not crying over said worksheets, that's okay. You know, you don't have to be this perfect Charlotte Mason, we go out into nature every day and that's how we homeschool parent to do it well. And if you are that parent, that is beautiful and great too. If you are an unschooling parent and you want to go that route, that's wonderful as well. But you have to just kind of find what fits for your family. And just to kind of go back to the idea of this unschooling versus, you know, give them a wide base of knowledge. Something that, you know, my son is not even 6 yet, so I obviously have lots of time to figure out what his high school experience will look like, but something that I've been really intrigued by is if I can give my kids, by the time they are in quote-unquote 8th grade, you know, 13, 14, somewhere in there, a really rich base where they know kind of the basics of everything, not really everything, but, you know, most topics, then when they're in high school, they can really have the freedom to choose what they want to study. If they're interested in a trade, they can explore that and get a lot of their credits that way so that they can do a little bit more of that unschooling self-directed learning on the back end. But I know that if they pick up any, you know, classic, they're going to have context for it. If they pick up the newspaper and are reading something and hear some obscure idiom or reference to something in history, they're going to have at least something to hang their hat on to understand it. And so that's kind of where I see our family going, is just enjoying these experiences together. And then when you're in high school, you kind of get to steer the boat a little bit more.
Yeah. And I've thought that so many times, like, thinking to myself, okay, I want to know what's going on in the world. You know, I remember back in my 20s and I turn on the news, but they're not explaining the story from the beginning. They assume you've been watching. So I remember looking for books like The News for Dummies. I don't know. Where do I find it? Now that in the last 3 years, definitely I have delved in so much that, you know, literally taking notes. I mean, I'm like, I've been the student the last 3 years that I never was. So, but you know, I guess you have context to it. I want to know it because now
you have a reason to.
Yeah. That things are going to be affecting my family. And, you know, so I want to learn and I don't want to sound stupid. So I want to make sure, you know, I have it right. And then I can go and research this and, you know, find out what bill was passed when, what did it say?
Yeah.
So it's been an interesting experience for sure. Now, talk to me a little bit about you were a teacher and you're choosing to homeschool. Was it always that way? Or were there certain things that you saw that you were like, I want to homeschool?
Yeah. So, you know, homeschool is always part of our conversation. When I graduated from college and I had finished my teaching, you know, my student teaching, I got a job teaching 8th grade language arts at a Title I school. I was 21 years old. I graduated mid-year and just kind of jumped in. The teacher that taught the first half of the year. The kids absolutely loved. Her husband got a job somewhere else and she moved. So I walked into a really tough situation, but I already wasn't really sure that I wanted to be a teacher. However, I was getting married. My husband had just hurt his back, and so he wasn't sure what he was going to do. And I was like, well, we need to eat and we need to pay our rent. So here I go, and maybe it'll get better. And in the district public school, I had a really bad experience teaching. I didn't feel like, there was all kinds of discipline issues and just the culture of schools that I did not enjoy. But even from an educational point of view, I just felt like I wasn't getting anywhere with my students. And I would ask for help from instructional coaches, and they would do the best they could and come in and help. But the feedback I got was, you're doing great. You're doing great. Just keep what you're doing. And so my thought was, well, if I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing and I'm doing so great, and this is still, my kids are still not making any progress, then something is wrong here. But I didn't know what it was. And so when I had just had my oldest son, I resigned from my job at the district public school, and I wasn't sure if I was going to look for another teaching job or if I was going to go and so maybe I'll just go get a job at Discover Card and answer calls or something to pay bills. And so I went to one last teaching interview at this classical charter school, and I told myself going to the interview, either they're going to tell me exactly what I want to hear, and I'm going to feel so confident that this is exactly the kind of school I want to work into, or I'm not teaching. And I was convinced that I would not enjoy my interview and I would walk away from teaching. But it was like every concern I had about education was, they were able to tell me exactly why and why their school is different. And so I had a wonderful experience at that school. I have nothing but good things to say about the school that I taught at before. And so that kind of made me think, well, maybe I will want to send my kids here. And then I was even going to try to stay on part-time after I had my second, and it just didn't work out with staffing for that year. And so I kind of had in the back of my mind, maybe I'll send my kids there. I can go back to teaching because I really do love it. I loved it there when they're all in school, and we'll see what happens. And then my son was diagnosed with autism. And on one hand, I felt a lot of pressure to put him into school because of that. But on the other hand, I have had students in my class in that wonderful, beautiful school who had the same diagnosis as him. And I just saw them struggle. And it's a charter school, so charter schools have different abilities they still have the same responsibility to meet the needs of special education students. But the way staffing works and all those things, it's not always the best fit for special needs. And so I just wasn't convinced that, if he got overwhelmed in a classroom full of 20 kindergartners and had a meltdown because he was just sensory overloaded, that it would be, I didn't fear that it would be handled inappropriately. I just didn't think it was the best environment for him. And so we had that kind of playing into it. But at the end of the day, my husband and I just feel very strongly convicted and called by the Lord to homeschool our kids. And so even if I had, no other reasons, no other benefits, we would still be doing it because of that. But the more I thought about it, the time freedom that we have, the ability for me to, dive in deeper to the things that he does show interest in and move a little quicker to things that he maybe doesn't care so much about, and to see my boys all learn together, those benefits just outweighed the benefit of, some days it would be nice to drop my kids off at school and I could go to coffee with a friend or grocery shop in peace or clean my house without a bunch of kids running around. But
sometimes I think about that with like divorce. I'm like, if I had the kids with their father this weekend, We're married though. We're married, yeah. Like happily married.
Yeah.
It would be nice to have a night free.
Yeah. You know, the temptation of that help that the school can provide is strong sometimes. But you just have to remember.
Like all good. So everything, just think about Facebook and Siri, everything that looks good in one way, there's someone behind it with an ulterior motive. Going back to like we were talking about earlier with the assistance for the homeschooling families, you know? You see that everywhere. So,
And my son asks a lot of really tough questions, and I want to be the one to answer those, you know? I use the same curriculum essentially that he would have if I did choose to send him to that school. But when we encounter something that doesn't line up with our worldview, I'm able to talk to him about, you know, why we think differently about those things. And I get to have those conversations with him. And I think that is appropriate on any subject. Whether I agree with another parent's perspective on it or not, it is that parent's job to have those worldview conversations with their child. And so that was a huge play in, especially in the last couple of years, even though I have a school local that I trust fully. I still just think that kids are better off being able to have those conversations with their parents.
I agree. And I know that a lot of times people will say, oh, well, then you're just sheltering them and keeping them in a bubble, and then they're going to walk out into the real world at 18 or 22 years old and be like, oh my gosh, well, they've, you know, kept me from all these things. But I like what you said about, you know, we'll talk about it and we'll have the conversation about why, you know, in our family, we believe this way. However, you know, I said that to my son this morning. He has something about, you know, God creating. So, and I said, well, yeah, not everybody believes that, but there is a Bible. Yeah. There's people that believe this. But just so you know, if someone looks at you funny one day because you say that, that's why, you know, you don't want them to be like, you know, just like if a parent thought of, you know, flat earth and their kid went out and just, what are you talking about, a solar system?
Yeah.
You know, you need to tell kids everything so that they're not, you know, walking out into world and people think they're nuts, you know?
Yeah.
So having those conversations at home and explaining them and talking about why you believe what you do is so helpful and much better than, like you said before, or I was saying before, hearing it from a teacher that, like, you know, I always talk about my teacher for history talking about the Bush and I think it was Bush and Gore election or something. And, you know, calling Bush Little Shrub. Or no, it must have been, but I don't know who it was. But she's, you know, so like clearly you knew how her, like Bush being, oh, he's just a little shrub. He's, you know, so like I knew her opinion. So that would, and she was influential in my life. So therefore it was, you know, became my opinion too. So, you know, you just, as it gets, the world gets a little nuttier and nuttier. Yeah, you wonder what other people are leaking into their little brains when all they really should be worrying about is, you know, having fun and being safe and
you know,
the core basics.
Yes, I agree. And I think even in wonderful, wonderful charter schools and a lot of private schools too, they still have testing requirements, even if that's not their biggest focus. And so they, at the end of the day, they still have to get the kids to a point where they can perform well on a test so that they can keep their good rating and they kids want to come back to the school and they can still get their funding. And even in the most, you know, caring, beautiful schools, at the end of the day, it's still a business. And so if that's not your goal for your child's education, if you want something different, you really have to bring it home. I think that's the only way to be able to have the end in mind for your kiddos.
So from a teacher's perspective, me coming into this homeschooling realm, are there things that my kid has to know by the end of kindergarten, the end of fifth grade, the end of eighth grade, the end of 12th grade. You know, I know you were touching on it before that, but is it just, no, there really isn't. They can just like be unleashed onto the world with nothing. You know, what are there guidelines?
That's a great question. So it kind of depends on, I guess it's how conspiratorial do you want me to get? you know, the public school system is broken into grade levels so that they can sort kids so that it's manageable. The only reason that, you know, we have kids in a grade level with kids of their own age is just because that makes the most sense for sorting a large group of kids. It would be too cumbersome to figure out where everyone is academically and make different classes and then have a teacher manage that, you know, different ages, socialization with different ages. It just isn't realistic for a large group of kids. So when it comes to the timing of different skills being, you know, needing to be acquired, I really don't think that there's a time limit on any of those things. Research shows for reading, for example, kids who read early and late, by the time they are in fifth grade, don't quote me on that, I believe it's either third or fifth grade, you cannot tell the difference. So let's say if it's by 12, if a kid learned to read at 10 or 4, there's no significant difference between their reading ability at age 12.
Wow.
So whether you are an early reader or a late reader really has no indication on how great of a reader you're going to be later on. And so I think that there are, you know, there's kind of some goalposts, of course, of you want your kid to know how to read anything that they pick up by the time they leave your house. I don't know, by the time they're 12, it depends on your family goals and your personal goals for the education. But there's not a set time of you need to check all these boxes at a specific age or else we're concerned that something is wrong.
Or the life cycle of a frog, or, you know, things like history, every war. Do they need to know every war? I mean, I'm trying to think back of what I remembered in school. I know there were wars. I guess 12 years sums it up to, I knew there were wars that happened.
Yeah.
But it's so hard to know, like by eighth grade, make sure, you know, they've done like a vast overview of world history and then solidify it again in the high school years. I don't know, in my head, like that's probably how it works.
Yeah.
Are you looking for a comprehensive homeschooling solution? It can be so confusing out there, especially when you're just getting started. My Homeschool Village has got you covered. They provide everything you need to homeschool successfully, including customizable lesson plans, interactive curriculum materials, and a community of experienced homeschoolers to help guide you along the way. Check out my episode with Becky, co-creator of My Homeschool Village. The episode is called Why It Takes a Village: Learn the Secrets to Homeschooling from a Mom Who Started 20 Years Ago. And that was aired on May 5th, 2023. With their easy-to-use platform, you'll have access to a wealth of resources and support to ensure your homeschooling journey is a success. Join My Homeschool Village today at myhomeschoolvillage.com and discover how easy and rewarding homeschooling can be. Use code HOW250 to get 50% off of your first year if you sign up now. That's HOW with the numbers 250. HOW250, and you can check that out with the link and the code right in my show's description.
Yeah, so the Core Knowledge Foundation has a document called The Sequence, and everything's broken into grade level, of course, because it's written for schools. They also have a series of books called What Your Grader Needs to Know. So it'll be like, what your kindergarten needs to know, what your first grader needs to know, what your second grader needs to know. Again, they're designed to fit into the public school system. But I think especially for parents who maybe have an only child, they're a really great resource. And the books have all of the read aloud texts already in them. So you can just open it and read a little bit. And then, you know, if you're interested in it, the kids can look at more. You can dive deeper into those topics. I don't think it's great for larger families, because when you're homeschooling multiple ages, it's a lot easier to teach them all together. So if you have a fifth grader and a second grader, you can absolutely teach those things together. But using those specific resources might not be great. But I think you should kind of go for big story, especially when it comes down to history. Like, what's the big story of the world? What's the big story of America? If you kind of get those overarching themes, and, you know, I don't expect my son to, you know, by the time you end eighth grade, I want you to remember every single Civil War battle or something like that. But I want him to know the narrative of history, the narrative of, you know, I want him to understand God's creation. So I want him to understand, at least on a general level, how his body works, how, you know, different animals are classified, how plants are different from animals, how different forces in nature work. And I think if you kind of go for that general big picture look when they're younger, especially when they're able to absorb so much information, they're like little sponges. Yeah. Then when they're in high school, like you were saying, they have all that background knowledge to pull from in order to make choices for what they're more interested in later on. But the Core Knowledge Foundation does have some really great guidance on kind of what kind of topics you want to hit.
Check that out. And do they get into math too? Because that's one
they have math. So the sequence is part of, math is part of the sequence. Their math curriculum is newer. And I will say that I prefer their older, I can send you links to some of these things so I can be a little bit more specific. I prefer their older science and history materials, because they're a little bit more traditional or classical. I think they have more of a conservative bent to them than their newer things, just because the standards in specifically in science have changed. They're more STEM minded. So if you have a kiddo who wants to be an engineer, it's probably great. And a little bit less nature minded. And I prefer the more nature minded options.
Yeah, no, that's a great resource. I hadn't heard of that one yet. So
then everything's free. So it's written for teachers, so you kind of have to dig through, but there's a read aloud and picture slides that so the kids can look at a picture and you can just read the little story. And it's great, and they have them for history and science.
It's all online, or is it something you print?
Yeah, it's all online. You can order
a book if you wanted to.
Yep, you can order hard copy books if you want. What I do is they have a flip book and an anthology for each unit. And so the flip book is the picture. So I put the image on my laptop and then I send the PDF of the teacher anthology to my Kindle. And so then I read that lesson from my Kindle and he flips through the pictures as we go.
Wow.
And so it's a really good money saver too. Everything's available for free.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay, there were a couple other things. So you plan on homeschooling your other two, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So they'll all be, and I had heard about that before, where when you have multiples, do you agree with that you would teach it to the oldest and the younger ones kind of pick up, not math, but things that are more the general context stuff?
Like, yeah, so I actually... my opinion is to teach to the middle. So how I see it working, so we do morning time. Right now, my 2.5-year-old does our morning time with us. So our morning time is mostly just our Bible right now. So I do a catechism, a Protestant catechism with my oldest, and my 2.5-year-old draws in his brother's old handwriting book. Because he thinks it's a workbook. And while we do that, and then I read a Bible story and we sing a song, and then I read from whatever read aloud we're doing. So if it's a chapter book or a picture book, whatever I'm doing for that week. And then that's what we do all together. And then when my babies are sleeping, I do the rest of my oldest instruction. But as we grow and add more kids to our official homeschool, that morning time will expand. So in that morning time, we'll do all of our shared learning. And Pam Barnhill is kind of like a homeschool famous person. Yeah, the Morning Basket. She has great resources and a lot of good tips for making that work. So what I see is kind of choosing my main read aloud for, let's say, history or science to be really geared towards what the middle child needs, because my oldest will probably have heard it before. So it might be the second time he's hearing even potentially the same resource. And I think that there's benefit in that. And then he could go off and read maybe an additional book on his own, or listen to an audiobook later on his own to kind of expand on that. So I tend to look at it with teaching to the middle, but I also take the view that in science and history specifically, you should do some spiraling. So you're not going to just teach the Revolutionary War one time and never touch it again. You know, maybe it's every 3 years you teach the Revolutionary War.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that makes sense.
So when it comes to teaching reading, I'm very lucky. I have, my grandmother lives in town and she was a reading specialist for her entire career. And so she tutors my son once a week and does reading with him. I taught first grade, so I know how to teach kids how to read. I even tutor, I do reading tutoring still, virtually. And, but there's just something different about having an outside source to help you sometimes when it comes to something that can be frustrating, like reading. And I think it depends on the child. I bought a Orton Gillingham-based dyslexia-friendly reading or phonics curriculum because I had some concerns about my son's phonemic awareness skills early on. But as he's caught up in the language, because of his autism, he was behind in his language development. As he's caught up, I really don't think that he has anything that's keeping him from learning to read. And so it became very cumbersome and he did not like it. And he was fighting me and not wanting to do it. So we've paused that, and he is learning a bunch of sight words and reads, you know, his little guided reading books that he does with my grandmother. And then I just started using an online program called Reading Eggs that he really likes to kind of fill in some gaps. And
that was Reading Eggs, like the
Reading Eggs, E-G-G-S. Yep. And it's got really silly little cartoons. But I'm actually, you know, looking at, as a teacher, I've been pretty impressed with the scope and sequence and the instructional capabilities of it. So he's doing that right now. And we are just taking it slowly and knowing that it's okay if he doesn't read all on his own by the end of first grade, because he's not going to be in a classroom where he's expected to do so. And we can go as slow or as fast as he wants to. I do think for kids, if you're getting to that 8, 9 age range, even 7, and it's just really a struggle, and you know, the normal, quote unquote, normal reading lessons aren't working, they're just not picking it up, then I think using a program that's dyslexia friendly is really helpful at that time, or looking into getting some assistance in reading tutoring, because sometimes it's just that the kids need an explicit, you know, really kind of formulaic approach to teaching phonics. Systematic is the word I'm looking for. They need systematic phonics so that it's, you know, first you teach CVC words, so that's like your cat, you know, consonant, vowel, consonant. And then you add digraphs.
I just looked that up the other day.
Yeah. And then you add blends and digraphs. And then you add silent E. And then you add vowel teams. And then you add.
Vowel team, is that like the EA together?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And so programs like All About Reading and Pride Reading are some systems that are built for homeschool parents to use that take that approach. My son likes little worksheets, and so that's what we're doing for now.
And I've heard parents obviously say, like, well, it doesn't have to be by, you know, 6 years old if they're just not ready or they don't have the context yet to know, oh, well, I might need to make a beaded keychain. Let me, you know, learn to read so I can read these instructions, even though my 39-year-old mother can't handle it. But so there's a fine line between your child just doesn't have really the context or the need for it yet, but there also could be a problem. So by a certain age, you said that was around 9?
I would say, I would say 7, 8, 9. And part of it is, too, something to look for is, do they have the phonemic awareness skills? So phonemic awareness is all the, and the phonological skills are like the sound. So before you even put a letter to the sound, are they able to rhyme or identify rhyme? Can they blend words together? So if you were to give the child maybe, you know, two words like cow and boy, could they put that together and know that the word is cowboy? And then with syllables, can they blend a word? So if you say, hey, listen to these sounds I make, at, what word did I say? And if they can say cat, then that means, those are indications that those phonemic awareness skills are solid, because those have to be acquired in order for you to read effectively.
Right.
If they're able to do all those things and they're just not reading, then it could be something, you know, their eyes aren't mature enough. There's countries and places that they don't teach physically, especially boys, to read until they're 7 because their eyes are physically not developed enough to track the words on the page.
Oh, interesting.
And so we really push our kids into, we kind of make an idol of reading independently. You've got to read independently now by the time you leave kindergarten. And I really believe that, because in third grade, you have to be able to read this test so that you can score well and prove that we taught you something. And so we've kind of made an idol of this read independently thing and push kids to do it too soon. But if you are noticing, like, your 5, 6-year-old can't rhyme or can't tell you what sound you hear at the beginning of a word, then it might be reason to be a little bit more concerned.
Okay. I think, yeah, that's helpful for myself and parents listening, because I've heard both. Oh, you know, just it'll come to them when they're ready and they have a need for it. But we should also be aware that there might be a time that you want to have like a dyslexia kind of thing looked at. You don't want to make their lives harder by ignoring something that could be there.
And I always say too, if teaching any skill, if it's math, if it's reading, whatever, is impeding on your relationship, then get outside help. If doing fonts with your kid is making you fight and causing, my headphone just fell, sorry. If doing phonics with your kid is making you fight and causing strain on the relationship, then it would be well worth your money to pay someone to tutor them, even if it's short term, even if it's for a couple months, just to give you a break and then step back into that, because nothing is worth the relationship.
That's really good advice. And like when I set out on this journey, you know, he was like just 3 years old. And I remember, you know, getting the busy toddler curriculum for preschoolers. And I have no teaching background at all. I have a communications degree, but not teaching at all. And I'm like, okay, this is letter A. I look at him later. Point to the letter A. And like, he couldn't do it. And I'm like, why aren't you paying attention? You're not listening to me. I'm getting all mad at him. And it's like, well, that's definitely not what you should do. But it's been more of a learning experience for me than this poor child that is just on along for the ride. I hope I don't miss you know too much.
No, my two and a half year old. So my oldest he couldn't talk yet, but at 18 months would sort colors, He loved doing learning things with me, even if he couldn't communicate about it. So we would do little, lots of busy toddler things, little sticker sheets and sorting the colors and pom poms. And I tried it out with my 2.5-year-old, and he throws the pom poms at me. This is a blue pom pom. Put it on the blue paper, puts it on the green paper, and gives me that look. Like he knows, but he just wants to be funny. So much of it is, you know, figuring out, okay, how are we going to learn together? And it's going to be different for every kid. But you get to know your kids so well in that. And because you've taught them all of those things when they are teenagers and they have more consequential lessons that they have to learn, you kind of already know how the brain works. And so you get to approach those from a very knowledgeable place.
What is your advice for the frustrated mother or father? When you're in that moment, you have the teaching background, you've experience with this. What do you do to take yourself down and regroup?
Take a break. It's okay not to finish a lesson. And it's also okay to table something, particularly when you're homeschooled, for a week or more. One of the things that's beautiful about homeschooling is you get to, and I'm wrong, but I believe in every state, as long as you hit the right number of days, you can set your calendar. I don't know of any state that says you have to follow a district school calendar. So if you are, you know, maybe teaching long division and you're just hitting a roadblock and it's not working. Maybe what you need to do is take a week off of either math or all of school and go to the baseball field, go to the park, enjoy your time together. And I would bet that when you come back to it, it'll be like you have a new kid in front of you. Even in the classroom, sometimes I have a student who just gets so, you know, hung up on one skill, and we don't always have the time to do that. In a school, you know, the test is coming on Friday and I can't bump it out just for you. But even taking a 15-minute break, like, hey, I really need this to be taken to the office. Would you go run that for me? Or why don't you go get a drink of water? Even those small breaks can really help. So in homeschool, we get to take those kind of to the next level. And if you need to take a little bit of time off, do that. Because again, the most important thing is your relationship with your child. And if that's not in check, if that's not in a good place, they're not going to learn anything anyway.
So don't threaten to send them to public school.
No, don't give up. No. Yeah, don't threaten to send them. No.
Don't give it that bad connotation. They'll be like saying to their cousins, like, you're in trouble.
I mean, think about what happens when we get frustrated with something from work. Like if you are working on something and it's just you're hitting your head against the wall, your immediate reaction, hopefully, isn't I'm going to quit my job. It's I'm going to take a break from this and do it tomorrow, you know, or I'm going to go ask a colleague for help. So, you know, if it's mom at home all day and math is a struggle, maybe you just put it to the side and say, hey, when dad gets home, why don't you look at this with him? Maybe it'll make more sense coming from him.
That's a great idea. So I guess I won't divorce them for the every other weekend off because I can see
you
that
need them
very, that would be very beneficial because they just, especially the boys, like look up to dad. Okay. Suddenly I can listen now.
And
just I think that's a good someone else explain something.
Yeah. I think it's a good alternative to, well, when your dad gets home, you're going to be in trouble because you're not listening to me. And can kind of give yourself some relief too and say, okay, I don't need to, it's okay if I don't teach him long division as long as he learns it, right? So it's okay if dad's the one who does it. I know families who save math until late because dad just teaches the math or whatever it is. And so there's nothing saying that, you know, you don't have to do school in the morning. You don't have to do it all in one sitting either. So if dad is the one who can teach the math without tears, then save it and do it then, or do math on the weekends.
You know, I like that. I never thought about that, but that's definitely a really nice thought to have there. Last thing I'm going to ask you, just because I'm in the situation of you gave up a career. Now, do you guys not mm-hmm. have to get a master's degree to teach in Arizona?
In the K-12 school?
Yeah.
No, you don't. Oh, so okay. Arizona State's teaching certificate is available with a bachelor's.
Okay. Yeah, because you said that you were 21 when you got your job. Yeah. How does that? Yeah, because so in New York, yeah. you have to have master's degree. Right. But which mm-hmm. I don't have. But I'm not a teacher, so that's okay. But I do have 15 years into like a government job, and I know the teachers in New York, they get a pension, as mm-hmm. I would as a government job. So I assume you would probably get that as well, and your benefits were good and stuff. So, was it hard to leave?
What made it hard for me to leave was not that I had great benefits or anything. Listen, Arizona is the bottom, if not next to the bottom. We're ranked like 49th or 50th in spending, test scores. Arizona's education system is nothing to write home about. And so we have a lot of homeschoolers here, even before COVID madness and all of that, simply because most of the schools are not good options here. So that part of it was not, I didn't have great benefits. I didn't have, there is state retirement, but it was nothing to write home about. So that wasn't an aspect of it. But what was hard leaving my career was that, at the risk of sounding arrogant, I was very good at it. And I got a lot of fulfillment from that and recognition. And when you are at home with your babies and homeschooling your kids all day, they are not telling you, wow, mom, you are just such a great teacher. You really killed that math lesson. Like, of course not. Because they're just going along. And it doesn't mean that they don't appreciate it. It doesn't mean that one day they're not going to say, you know, mom, thank you for teaching me. But that day in, day out, it's very thankless. And so that was hard because I knew I'd be leaving something that made me feel very successful to go into something where I knew I could homeschool my kids well, but I am not Miss Homemaker. Keeping up with my house is not my strong suit. And so I get up each day and I'm very humbled by a job that is difficult for me. And so that was kind of something that I was afraid to jump into. But now having been home for almost 3 years, I'm very thankful for how it's grown me and how humbling it's been and how it's the Lord's really used it to break my pride and to know that I'm not what I do and that what I'm pouring into my kids is more important than any recognition that I could get from my outside career. That being said, I have found the ways to be able to still kind of get some of that fulfillment while being home. So I have three classes left in my master's degree in English and creative writing. And so I hopefully will one day be able to teach online community college courses with that. And I also started a business. It's a very slow grow business because my business partner and I both have babies, but designing resources to help families who are homeschooling or who send their kids to school but want to be involved in their children's education. So part of that is doing reading tutoring online. And then we do have one e-course created on that phonological awareness that I was talking about. So
that's awesome.
There's other ways.
Give me links to that so we can show notes. Perfect.
Yes, absolutely. So I'll be actually taking a couple of students on for summer tutoring. So if any of your listeners are into relationship issues because their kids are struggling to read and you're struggling to teach them and want some extra help, I really love doing that because I love helping the kids. But I also love empowering parents to know that they can teach their children. They are the most equipped person. And my hope with families that I work with is that you won't need me for very long because you'll be confident in teaching your own child.
Oh, I love that. I hope you'll come back on to the show again, because an hour and 10 minutes like flew by, and you have so much info. And your kids are young, so I am interested to see how, you know, this will continue, and like I want to hear all about it. So especially because your kids are the same ages. And so the more resources you find, it would be cool to come back in 6 months or a year and kind of see where you're at then, and more info that you have to share for us.
Yeah, I'd love that. I'm working on a book right now, kind of answering that question, like, what do I need to teach my kids? So it's, you know, everything's a slow grow when you have a 7-month-old. I'm sure you understand that, but I really do have a passion for helping other homeschool families. My husband too, he really feels like that's something that we're called to. So I would love to come back and chat anytime. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you for reaching out, because this has been perfect. So yes, I will definitely have you back on again. I'm going to note that. And I agree. When I decided to start the podcast itself is actually the least amount of the work, because it's like the marketing and, oh, you got to go and make a Facebook page and an Instagram account and whatever else. And you got to post on it every day. And then you got to go like advertise, you got to do reels. And I'm like, what is a reel? What is a story? What? So that is the majority of it, which I'm kind of failing at, but we're still doing really well. Not that I'm like making money or anything, but every day I look and there's like more downloads. So somebody's listening. So
yeah, it's been awesome. People are hungry for this kind of information, because there's more and more families homeschooling, and everyone wants to do it well. Everyone wants to know, wants reassurance that they can do it and that they're doing a good job.
And I guess, you know, homeschool lesson number one that I learned from you was that even though we have different time zones in the United States, Arizona is mountain time, yet it does not follow daylight savings. So right now you are 3 hours behind Eastern Standard Time. And when I went to go book someone else recently that was in mountain time, and I was like, so you're 3 hours behind, right? They like replied like, you moron, no. I'm like, oh, that's just Arizona. Okay. Yes. Only during the daylight time that they don't observe it for.
Yes. It's hot enough here. Yeah. It's hot enough here. We don't need any more daylight.
Oh my God.
No more daylight.
So my nephew's actually driving out to Arizona this weekend. He's driving from New York to Arizona. He like won a contest, so he has to sit in timeshare. In Arizona, he's like driving for 3 days to stay two nights in Arizona and then driving home to be 21 again, right?
Yeah, you know, it's great weather here right now, so that's good. A good time to visit.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show, and I will put everything that we kind of discussed, all the links, in our show notes, and thank you for being here, and good luck to you on your journey. Your kids are very lucky to have you.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of The Homeschool How-To. If you've enjoyed what you heard, please consider helping me out by sharing this podcast with friends, with your homeschool community, and even to your favorite homeschool group Facebook page. As a new podcast, we're really trying to get our episodes out there so that we can keep going. Also, if you'd like to be a guest on the show and tell us about your homeschooling experience, email me at thehomeschoolhowto@gmail.com or visit thehomeschoolhowto.com and send me a message through Facebook or Instagram. Thank you for your time and for your love of the next generation. We'll see you next week.